Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit Podcast. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Scott Conway of LGG Media, which is an agency that services brands like Playboy, Remax Corporate, Fancy.com, and Pfizer. Today, we're going to be discussing Scott's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Scott.
Thanks for having me, Julia. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So to get started, let's dive into a couple of questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Let's rock and roll.
All right. So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur and agency owner?
That's a great question. I mean, I've always been very purpose-driven. Like, it's something that I've always thought a lot about. And whether it was when I was doing telemarketing all the way then to being a software account executive and from managing a security company, like all of these kind of footnotes along the way, I've always taken a purpose into that. And I think, like, oftentimes we can get caught up in this idea of, like, well, it's like, what is my life's purpose? And it's something that we can kind of overthink ad nauseum and really just kind of paralysis by analysis of not committing to something. And what I found very helpful is to think about, what is my purpose right now? How am I being of service right now?
Yeah.
And not just to, like, and not just like it, whether it's to myself or others, it's really holistically, like, how can I add the most value to others and then also myself?
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, like, when I had to put it in a context, when I was managing a security company, it was to be a great leader, to software sales, being mastering the sales process end to end, to now it's mastering being an executive and putting forward the best possible service that we can, that's the best business wise, and just making sure that, understanding very clearly in that, in my mind, like, that North Star of, like, what is the Michael Jordan of what I'm doing look like? And then what are the metrics associated with that? And then how do I actually go about doing that? And so that's what gets me up and going every day, is doing that. And then also, and part of a big part of that goal is making sure that we're building a company that people are happy to be part of, and that people are excited to come to work every day. And we actually have our quarterly team surveys going out this week, so I'm really looking forward to seeing that feedback. Because Towers Watson, who is one of the leading HR consultants in the world, has shown in their studies that companies with great cultures are 63% more profitable than companies that don't.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, when your team is happy and excited to come to work, you know, every day, and they feel appreciated, they're just going to enjoy their work that much more. And that's going to come through in the quality of work that they are offering to your clients at the end of the day. So I agree. I think it's so important to just have that culture dialed in. And it just makes everything more enjoyable as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. So tell us a little bit more about your story around starting LGG Media.
So I have been working at, it's a great story. I've been working at a company called Veeam as an account executive / account manager, kind of a hybrid role. And there was this gym that I'd work out at across the street every day at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And there was there's this personal trainer that was there at the gym. He kept trying to sell me on personal training services. And I told him politely that I wasn't interested, but he was also in sales. So he followed up. Yeah. And so salesperson to salesperson, I respected his hustle. And so instead of actually signing up with him with personal training services, I started to walk him through, like, how can I help you? How can I help you generate more leads, even though I'm not going to sign up? Like, how can I add value?
Yeah.
So I started walking him through what he could do with Facebook, Google, and just kind of spitballing ideas. And then, you know, always be closing. he actually offered to hire me to do that for him. And
interesting.
Then, so being in Canada, we had the Canadian equivalent of a Venmo or a Cash App. He Canadian Venmo'd me the money on the spot. And that's how we got our first client.
That's so interesting.
Now, the funny part is that I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I don't know this. I don't know the tech. Like, I had a very like overview of how to do this, but at the same time, like, I wasn't just going to, integrity being one of my core values, I wasn't just going to take this order and then not do anything with it. Is mm-hmm. So I called the best person that I knew at the time, who knew the most about this, to see what he was up to and to see how he had been full time on a different venture, see how it was going, and then see if there's any opportunity for him to work with me on this specific project. And he was also the smartest person, one of the smartest people that I knew, most driven as well. So I pitched him on working together and helping me out, and he said yes. So
that's so that awesome. One.
Yeah, Calicchio, my business partner. And so fortunately, and then I just pitched him on, well, if we deliver on this, I'll split it with you 50-50. Mm-hmm. So we had we delivered 3 customers for him in the first 2 weeks out of 20 leads that we had sent him. Mm-hmm. And we said, well, this was mid 2018. So we decided, okay, well, let's get the LinkedIn up and running and start reaching out to personal trainers, start sending messages to see if there's a market for this, to see if there's demand. And so we had acquired a number of different customers on a mm-hmm. trial basis. And one of them is actually still a client of ours to this day. Fun fact, we've been able to retain them. But from there, we got a few kind of, another hilarious story. But after about 6 months of doing that, we started making decent enough money that it looked like, hey, like, I could probably quit my full-time job. Mm-hmm. But then after around the seventh month mark was when we landed our first big account, mm-hmm. where they're spending, I don't know, from memory at the time, they were spending $100,000 a month.
Okay.
On online ads, so Google, Facebook. Mm-hmm. And then we also got another email marketing client, which isn't the niche that we service now, but we still, maybe we're starting out, we'll take anything.
Yeah.
It's not really a specific niche. But then also, kind of funny, is the company that I was at was going through this transition period at the time. Mm-hmm. So, and I was a team lead in all but name. I had the most senior person there on the team, this specific team. And so what I had done is I wrote up this lengthy proposal. I think it was like 4 pages on why it is that they should keep me on board part time and to help out with this transitionary period. And the amount of money I was really there coming in for 2 days a week, but I was able to position the proposal in a way that solved a specific problem, solved the problem that they were going through. And so I also won my former employer as a client, which helped pay the bills or ease into me going full time. So it wasn't like a rip off the band-aid kind of like jump head first. It was more smooth. And then I also, after I signed that, I went to Panama for 2 weeks just to test out working remotely, see what that was like. And that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm living in Medellin now, but that's really how we had got started. And I mean, it's been 4 years since then. So we're coming up on, it'll be 5 years in May.
Very cool. Yeah, I love that story. There's so many unique things that just kind of worked out. It was like good timing. And then also, of course, you know, working your butt off and behind the scenes. And yeah, it's really cool how that's all worked out.
Yeah, it was a lot of work, like you said. And after going full time for the first year, we definitely had our hiccups. Like, we really struggled with lead gen.
Mm-hmm.
To a point where where I actually had doubts whether or not we would make it. Like, we mm-hmm. had, I mean, we had like a number of clients, but we're paying ourselves like below minimum wage at this point.
Yeah.
And
we're on the ramen diet.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so it was very much uphill, but then after in 2020, the pandemic had actually put a lot of wind in our sails.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically enough, because as we launched a kind of like a corporate side hustle, so to speak, where we had focused on servicing realtors, so small business customers, in addition to a few larger accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had focused on real estate, and now that real estate division has grown into its own entity.
Interesting.
That is not 100%. It's very close to being self-sufficient. Very, very close, but not quite.
Yeah.
And so then we have the main agency book of business where we service mostly small. And when I say small, I mean like $5 million a year. And
okay.
Revenue plus accounts. That's really yep. our main budgetary qualifier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything above that is really where what it is that we're good at. And then we also have our real estate division, which services realtors that are doing anywhere from $200,000 a year in commission all the way up to $20 million.
Interesting. So yeah, that's interesting that you guys had that challenge of lead gen. I think that's such a common struggle that so many digital marketers, you know, struggle with when they're first starting out their agencies. So how did you kind of help crack that code and help bring in more leads into your agency when you were first starting out?
So we had done a number of, now we do Facebook groups, partnerships. Mm-hmm. Other agencies, because something that we offer that's very unique is that we have attribution software, so we can track down to the penny of what somebody's return on investment is, whether it's storefront or online ads or organic.
Okay.
Excuse me. Online ads to storefronts, anything. So that is very much a unique selling proposition that gets mm-hmm. our foot in the door in many accounts. And we're also partnered with an amazing SEO agency.
Mm-hmm.
We're partnered with a creative agency. And so that brings in leads, Facebook groups, like I mentioned, and then a lot of SEO. Like we started investing very heavily in SEO at the end of 2019, so beginning of 2020. And that has paid enormous dividends for us.
Interesting.
And that's the reason why we've been able to do that is because we've kept most of the money in the business. Like, we still don't pay ourselves very much. And what that's been, because we're focused on our customers. Like, it's for us is, I kind of scoff or roll my eyes a little bit at my people that maybe they, I think that seem to overvalue the lifestyle and the lavish lifestyle, where it's like, for us, we're focused on our customers. We're focused on how is it that we deliver the best possible service? How is it that we mm-hmm. build the best possible company?
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to do that if you're taking 50% of the profit of the business or more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you definitely have to pay your dues in the early days and put that money back into the business. It's I think that's such a smart business decision for sure.
Yeah. It otherwise it's Lambos and Dubai, which is I mean, it's not my cup of tea, but whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, it's true. Awesome. So yeah, I love how you had those, you know, strategic partnerships to help grow your agency as well. I think that's so smart. And and then you're both just able to refer work back and forth amongst you guys. So that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, how did you go about obtaining those strategic partnerships? Did you just, you know, do some cold outreach and you know, hop on a call? What did that look like?
A lot of right place, right time. Like we'd worked on a few deals together, like they'd given us, we just happened to meet at those circumstances where they gave us a deal, or vice versa, that we worked together on. And then we showed the quality of our work. And then in showing the quality of our work is when they decided to, it's like, wow, maybe we should do something a little more formal and they'll just refer business here and there. I mean, our SEO vendor, we partner with on all of our deals together. Mm-hmm. So anything that they need paid ads on, we service, or they need attribution software, we service, and anything that we need to bring SEO on, we refer their way as well.
Interesting. Okay. So you guys mostly focus on the attribution software and then you partner for all the other services that you offer?
So the paid ads we do. We run the paid ads in-house, but the attribution software on top of that.
Got it. Okay.
The attribution software is usually our lead in, and that gets our foot in the door.
Right.
Very often.
Okay. Very cool. So what is, you know, the secret sauce to maintaining happy clients? So how do you keep your clients happy so that they're hopefully going to, you know, bring in referrals down the road?
Big part of it is managing expectations and keeping track of the number of clients who feel like you haven't set the right expectations, because inevitably there's going to be some bad apples. Like it's just a problem. As soon as you start hitting any level of scale, it's inevitably going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily your fault. And what's something that I struggle with starting out is I used to take that personally. And it used to be, and I struggle with people pleasing and like, because I really want to do a good, great job. Like I really want to make sure that clients are happy, that we're, that it's a win-win relationship. Mm-hmm. And so whenever it was, it can be very easy to get kind of lose sight of the bigger picture of why it is that the client first hired us in the first place, what it is that you're kind of in the thick of it, or that they're giving pushback on certain things. So a big part of it is just managing those expectations, being upfront. And if somebody is not willing to sign, and the lesson that I had to learn the hard way of, if somebody is not willing to sign up because you're doing a good job of managing expectations, then you're just saving yourself a headache down the line.
Yeah. Yeah. You're really qualifying them in the meantime.
Yeah. And that's something, and when I say you, I'm speaking generally, of course. I don't want to make it seem like I'm talking at your listeners. But it is really important just to make sure that you're transparent throughout all stages of the onboarding process, letting them know what's coming next, what are the things that they can expect throughout their customer journey. It makes the world of difference.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, it's just so important to have that communication dialed in. It's way easier to, you know, prepare someone, this is what you can expect, than to kind of reel things back whenever they had an expectation set for something else and it just hasn't met their expectation. And then you just have to go into damage control mode.
Yeah. Exactly. Anytime that you're putting yourself on the, it's the same thing in the sales process or marketing of, want to always preempt their objections, as opposed to when it is that it happens, is, and when there's a fire, is like the last thing that person wants to hear is being told, having their expectations managed. They want you when there's a problem.
Yeah, totally. So what would you say has been the biggest overall challenge that you've had to overcome as you've been growing LGG Media?
That's a great question. I mean, there's been so many that come to mind. It's hard to, like, entrepreneurship is not for anybody. Like, this is it's a marathon at a sprint pace.
Mm-hmm.
And learning that specific lesson of, you know, like, there's always, if there's not a gun to your head, there will be. And mm-hmm. whenever I say you, I'm really saying from my experience. So whenever I've taken my foot off the gas, so to speak, and thought, you know, I can rest on my laurels, is it's like that old Ray Dalioism of, if you're not worried, it's a good idea to start worrying.
Yeah.
And that has always, that's so branded into my head now of what great operations looks like is being proactive.
Mm-hmm.
And for me is, and just leaning on my executive network and leaning on folks that have managed much larger teams, it's really important just to continue to be proactive and continue to always, like, something that a mentor of mine, Sammy Knight, talks about is you step in, being a great operator is stepping in and run the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so run the business. Like, let your team, like, build people up so that the team is self-sufficient and they're autonomous. Going back to great culture, it's a big part of it.
Yeah, having those processes put in place.
Yeah. And so I'd say the biggest lesson that I've had to learn, to get back and answer your question, is there's no unless you're sold or whatever it is that your goal is and the business is 100% self-sufficient, it probably won't be. I mean, there's probably still needs about an hour of maintenance, however much maintenance it needs per month to get to that point. I haven't got there.
Mm-hmm.
But where it's quote unquote self-sufficient is that there's always something lurking around every corner that if I'm not proactively checking what's behind those corners, then nobody's going to. And that one of those things could fuck me up. So
mm-hmm.
can I swear on this?
Yeah. I don't think there's any kids listening.
Okay, good. So it's really important for me to continue to chuck around those corners, just to think ahead and be in that. It's really tough when you have multiple hats. Like, it's a constant kind of struggle of, okay, what can I offload so I can, what are the things that I can offload so that I could take on more things?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a
constant, where is your time best spent?
Yeah, exactly. And so focusing on making sure that I'm spending the time that's required on that senior operational role of mm-hmm. continuing to look ahead, continuing to anticipate, and continue to think about things that, like doing that kind of ongoing SWOT analysis of strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and just mm-hmm. continuing to think about those opportunities and threats to ensure that I'm being proactive about managing them so that there's no surprises.
Mm-hmm. It can definitely be challenging finding that balance of working on the business versus working in the business. So how do you find that balance? I'm sure it's something no one's really mastered, but do you have any tips for how you can, you know, time management and, you know, just ensure your time is being used in the best possible way?
Something a mentor of mine, he exited a company of 4,000 employees. Something he says is, are you being proactive versus reactive? And I think that's really the litmus test.
I love that.
And then another one that's really good is, are you focusing on, or are you doing the, like, managers in a perfect world? Mm-hmm. And obviously there's some exceptions to this rule, but in a perfect world, am I focusing on, or am I doing urgent, non-important tasks, i.e. putting out fires, day-to-day operations?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I doing important, non-urgent tasks? Now, it's like, well, Scott, every urgent task is important. So yes and no. I mean, there's urgent, important tasks, and then there's also urgent, non-important tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And so ensuring that there's a team, or getting to a place of, I mean, really, it just comes down to sales. There's that market, I think it's Mark Cuban that said, sales cures all, where it's yes, more or less, where if you have the cash flow, then you can invest in the people, then invest in the people to take care of those things, take care of those responsibilities, to get them off of my plate, to focus on those more important non-urgent tasks like planning, operational analysis, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a constant, like, at time, and that's why I preface it by saying in a perfect world, because it's not necessarily going to work out like that. And oftentimes I'll catch myself doing urgent, non-important tasks, and it's like, okay, well, why am I doing this? All right, mm-hmm. Who's the person that I need to take care of this, so I don't need to do it?
What are, so just coming back to being, am I in proactive or reactive mode?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's important as well. And just out of curiosity, Julia, who are most of the listeners to this podcast?
Other agency owners or digital marketers.
Okay, got it. So the big thing is, the big thing for hiring people is making sure, and what I, again, the lesson that I've learned the hard way of just giving people too many responsibilities, is that as their work and process increases, lead time approaches infinity. So it's very much like, work and process is here, lead time is here, then it's exponential, 100% being infinity. So the more responsibilities I've given people, the less that they take on, or excuse me, the less mm-hmm. that they get done, and mm-hmm. the less effective that they are at actually getting those things done. So metrics and KPIs that suffer. And so what I found is really important is, whenever hiring people, just keeping their sandboxes simple.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great way to address that issue. So you just are very, you just try to simplify their workload so that they're doing like similar things on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So where do you see LGG Media in 5 years' time?
It's a great question. Am I being interviewed? Oh yeah, I am. well, right now we're actively trying to simplify what it is that we do. Mm-hmm. I mean, having two separate lines of business is very challenging. It's very challenging to grow both simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking at a lot more closer partnerships with other creative agencies, other SEO agencies, software development. Like, how is it that we can offer, because we're offering a high-end service to a very, at the core of our strategy is offering a high-end service, high-end multitude of services to a select number of clients. So servicing a lot of needs for a select few.
Got it.
And very much like a white glove service offer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as part of that, like I said, we're going to be looking to create additional more partnerships to service those needs. And by doing that, that'll give us more foot in the door, and ultimately more market share. And to get back to answer your original question, hopefully talking and about what's next, and have the business more or less taken care of, self running on its own with the CEO.
Okay, interesting. So you're looking to simplify things and get those processes really dialed in, so it's gonna, you know, the machine's just gonna run itself like a well-oiled machine, and
looking for more of those partnerships so you can be, you know, offloading that work as well, it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Very exciting. All right. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but before we move on to the Fast Five, do you have any final thoughts or words of wisdom you'd like to share with our listeners?
Whatever timeline that you think something is going to take, it's probably going to take longer, and prepare emotionally for that.
Yeah, just having that patience, finding that balance between having the hustle and also the patience. It's definitely challenging.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're now ready to move on to the Fast Five. So I have five rapid fire questions for you. Please. So first question, what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Relentless by Tim Grover. Read it.
I like that one.
Over 20
times.
One.
Oh, really? Yeah, no, it's a good one. It's so motivational and inspiring.
Yeah.
And what does your morning routine look like?
I wake up at 5 a.m. I meditate for, depends on how long, like 5 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Then I go to the gym for 5:30, where my personal trainer is there waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Work out for 45 minutes, get back. I'm doing a fast up until 11 a.m., which is, I start my fasting window the previous day at 5 p.m. or 4 p.m.
Interesting.
Usually four, but it's an 18-hour, 18-hour fast each day. And I just find it helps me get to work starter. I'm really much of a big fan of that Alex Hormozi idea of like, what matters is the faster that you can get into work.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. So
interesting.
I usually start work, it depends on the morning, but anywhere from 7:30 to 8 o'clock, no later than 8.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That sounds like a really solid morning routine. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a CEO that you follow or study?
There's a few, Alex Hormozi being one of them.
Mm-hmm. He's
Elon
awesome.
Elon Musk being another, mm-hmm. he operates at such a high level. One of my mentors, Brian Perley, he's hybrid. I mean, he's worked in CEO and COO roles. Those are the CEOs or executives that come to mind.
Awesome. Yeah. I follow Alex Hormozi on social, and he has so many great tips for sales. He's just like, he's got so much content out there. It's amazing.
Very rational and measured as well. Measured is probably not the right word, but intense is probably a more accurate word, but very, very like hyper rational, and which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I really like him. And what is your favorite online tool?
G Suite.
Yeah. Helpful.
G Suite, Google Data Studio. That's really it.
Yeah. Awesome. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Don't limit yourself to sales, and don't ever pigeon. This is what I would tell myself is don't ever pigeonhole yourself. You're a lot smarter than you give yourself credit for. You learn a lot quicker than you thought you could. With the Feynman tech, by teaching yourself things like finding the Feynman technique, commit to being a student.
I think that's amazing really advice.
Really learn to all the facets of the business, because you do all. It's just a matter of choosing which ones that you're willing to trade off and be great at versus the things that you're not willing to trade off. And so just focus on sales and operations, and don't think just because you have ADHD that you can't do operations. that you can't love operations. You absolutely can.
Yeah. And I love how you say commit to being a student, because yeah, I think that's so important. You know, just don't let your foot off the gas when it comes to continually, you know, just upping your skill set and learning more. Because that's, you know, how you're going to grow and improve in all areas of your business.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Scott. It was a real pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I've really enjoyed learning about your journey. So thank you so much for joining me for today's episode.
Thanks, Julia. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate the invite.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.